The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. Hey, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, August 5th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Never enough time in the day, especially on a Monday when there's all sorts of important breaking news. I've had to write up a couple of articles on this already. Some amazing stories coming out today. Most prominently, revelations that were reported by Reuters news agency about the complicity of the Drug Enforcement Administration Special Operations Division working with NSA, Homeland Security, FBI, CIA, IRS, a bunch of alphabet soup agencies to take terrorism spying data, all of that stuff Edward Snowden's been talking about, been leaking out about how the NSA is spying on American citizens, taking that information, giving it to local cops to bust you for drugs, and then, kind of like Men in Black, magically erasing any memory or knowledge that they were there to give the initial tips. We'll talk about that, and the whole internet is all talking about this in drug law reform. Hopefully Thursday we'll have some people from Leap on the show as well that can give some better insight on this breaking story. Also, another breaking news story, Gallup organization has released yet another poll about Americans' consumption of marijuana that gives lie to the idea that legalizing or liberalizing marijuana laws is going to lead more young people to try marijuana. In fact, the opposite has happened. Fewer young people are trying marijuana. More older people are trying marijuana. We'll give you all the numbers and the crosstabs here when we go behind the headlines. Also behind the headlines, another body cavity search caught on dash cam from Texas State Troopers. This one, a bikini body cavity search. Once again, female troopers running their hands inside the anus, the vagina of women, suspecting them for hiding weed in there. We'll talk about that also on our show and show you the very disturbing video. In our Daily Toker Tunes today, it's Roots Monday. We got some new music from a band called Blaine and Sarah. I guess it's a duo, Blaine and Sarah. We're going to be playing some new music here off of their album, A Long Time Coming, this little EP, and a tune called Scorned. So check that out at 20 past. Thanks for joining us here for the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. You can get us by live audio stream or by getting us through podcast or YouTube video. Just check out 420radio.org. Click on the Connect to 420 radio button in the top right, and all of our social media and streaming operations and podcast operations are all listed in there for your pleasure. All right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we've got your 420 radio news coming right at you.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Time for your 420 radio news for Monday, August 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. In the United States, 38% have tried marijuana. Little change since the 1980s. This from Gallup.com. Even as American support for legalizing marijuana has doubled and more than 20 states have loosened marijuana restrictions in various ways, Gallup finds relatively little increase throughout the past three decades in the percentage of U.S. adults who say they have tried marijuana. 38% of Americans admit to having tried marijuana, compared with 34% in 1999 and 33% in 1985. Gallup's trends by age reveals that widespread experimentation with marijuana first occurred among adults aged 18 to 29 between 1969 and 1973, rising from 8% to 35%. It then continued to mount, reaching 56% by 1977, and remained at that level in 1985. Since then, however, marijuana use among young adults has progressively declined. At the same time, as the bulge of young adults who tried marijuana in the 1970s ages and replaces older Americans who never tried it, the rate of all Americans who have ever tried the drug has increased slightly. In particular, adults between the ages of 30 and 64 are the most likely age group to say they have tried marijuana, while young adults aged 18 to 29 are the most likely to indicate they currently smoke it. Also, by a 47% to 30% margin, men are more likely than women to say they have tried the drug. However, there is less of a gender difference in current reported usage, with 8% of men reporting current usage compared to 6% of women saying they smoke pot. Frequent users of marijuana and alcohol already know the health risks, study shows. From FoxNews.com. Users of marijuana and alcohol may be savvier about the health risks posed by these substances than those who abstain, new research suggests. The findings, which were drawn from a large sample of Swiss men, showed that men who frequently used marijuana, alcohol, and tobacco sought out information about the health risks of those substances more than those who didn't use them. People who smoked cannabis at least once a week were four times more likely to search for health risk information as those who abstained. Is New Jersey's medical marijuana program the most expensive in the nation? From NJ.com. In the 8 months since New Jersey's first dispensary, Greenleaf Compassion Center in Montclair, opened, patients and providers have learned the nation's most restrictive medical marijuana program is also the most expensive. From registration fees required and required multiple doctor visits that insurance won't cover, to sales tax and the price of pot, New Jersey's costs are generally higher than the 10 other states in Washington, D.C. that permit medical marijuana retail sales, according to a Star Ledger analysis. The review found New Jersey is tied for second among the costliest registration fee, $200 for 2 years, has the third highest sales tax, 7%, and the steepest marijuana prices, according to state dispensary websites. Greenleaf patients say they have spent between $440 and $560 for an ounce of marijuana, depending on the strain. A New Jersey patient getting started in the program can spend $700 for an ID card and an ounce of marijuana, compared with $300 in Colorado, $510 in Washington, D.C., $531 in Arizona, and $460 in Michigan. Lansing ballot initiative would legalize marijuana possession up to an ounce, from MLive.com. Organizers on Monday submitted thousands of signatures in an effort to put marijuana legalization for the city of Lansing, Michigan on the November ballot. Jeffrey Hank, who heads the Coalition for a Safer Lansing, turned in the 6,400-some signatures to the Lansing City Clerk's Office. The initiative calls for amending Lansing City Charter, legalizing the possession, use, and transfer of an ounce of marijuana by adults 21 years and older on private property. Lansing City Clerk Chris Swope said the law gives him 45 days to verify the authenticity of the coalition signatures and whether there are enough to put the initiative on the November ballot. Signatures must amount to a minimum 5% of Lansing's total number of registered voters, about 4,200, in order to make the ballot. Cannabis drug company GW Pharmaceuticals reports bigger losses, from telegraph.co.uk. It made a pre-tax loss of £3.5 million compared to a loss of £2.3 million for the same period last year. Revenues were also down from £14.5 million to £7.3 million. GW Pharmaceuticals, which makes Sativex and oral spray based on the active ingredients in cannabis, blamed the slip on a £9.8 million payment received in the third quarter last year for reaching milestones on the path to licensing the drug for pain treatment. Sativex is mostly used for the treatment of multiple sclerosis symptoms and is approved in 22 countries. GW Pharmaceuticals said it was making progress in its bid to enter the lucrative American market, having submitted plans for a final clinical trial to regulators. Justin Gover, GW Pharmaceuticals' chief executive, said the company was in, quote, robust financial position, end quote, following a £19.6 million U.S. share placement in May. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, August 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines with shocking video from police dash cam from Texas police who pulled over three women and searched their vaginas for marijuana. This is a new case, not the case we had previously told you about. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
Pirates here.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And you'll remember we told a story a couple of months ago about two women who had been sexually assaulted on the roadside outside of Irving, Texas, by Texas state troopers who claimed they saw them littering and then claimed they smelled marijuana. And that justified them calling a female trooper over to search the two women, a body cavity search on the side of the road in front of the cop car, using one glove for both women to search their anus and vagina. So this is a new case. This has actually happened again, folks. And we have some pretty stunning video to show you. So we'll switch over to the video and let you hear from the police dash cam on this case.
How you doing, lady?
Hi.
That's how it's told. The reason for the stop there is your speed. Is that okay?
Yeah.
150, please.
Cigars
with marijuana in them, or
no,
just
cigars?
Okay, you haven't freaked them yet or anything like that?
No.
Okay. All right, give me 1 minute.
All right, so far, the only thing I found is a piece of the blunt that's up under the passenger seat. Is that one right there? I'm not doing a case report for that unless you find something on you. Is there anything in your hat? Your underwear, your bra? You're going to search you. I ain't going to do that. Because I'm not getting up close and personal with the woman area. All right? Hang tight. You're going to get some gloves on and get some.
Yeah, my face is burning my eyes.
Right.
It's burning in my eyes.
That is?
Yeah.
All right, hang tight. She's going to come get
you. You don't have anything at all. Don't go anywhere.
What's up? Not much, man. I was going to the house to check on Mama, and I saw this young lady hauling butt.
You're gonna go up my
I got a message on the NDT talking about people hauling butt up and down the road here.
Oh, my. You're gonna stick your fingers in my stuff?
Yeah, she was apparently behind them. And they're all just on their way back to Houston, and that's why the big U-turn came back and see what was going on. Like that, I stuck my hand in the window of the bus.
Was this pain or was it pretty strong?
It's pretty painful.
Huh?
It's a stronger pain.
It's pretty strong, man. I found the line about that big in there. So. Got the passenger head of the zipper open. So I don't know if she stuffed something in her crotch or if this one did, but you can still smell it.
It's just at the beach with the windows down. Enjoying it.
Well, when I pulled her over, she rolled that window down. All of them. She had all of them before I turned around.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't like
this. She got for you?
Nothing on her? Good. Yeah, her. She's the one that had the zipper open, so we'll see.
Do you know how
violent
it is
here? Hey, you know, come on out. Come on, Spark. We'll set your feet up this way.
3-4-52.
How you doing,
ladies? Hi.
Tech 5 Patrol. The reason for the stop there is your speed. Everything okay?
Yeah.
1-0-50, boy.
Tech 5
Patrol, you have a call message. 1-0-50. Wait for 227-6.
Can I put my dress on
so
I have my
shoes
on?
No, don't worry about it. Come on out here. Ask
your
questions, Hamilton.
When was the last
time you had a beach? Don't waste my time.
When I was going down to the beach.
Okay. When I searched the vehicle, am I going to find anything?
No.
When you're searched by a female officer, is she going to find anything?
No.
You have anything in your bra or your underwear?
No.
Okay, what about your purse?
This is what the War on Drugs has come to. We're trying to find a small baggie of marijuana. It's not like a woman could store a whole bunch up there. This is what it's come to. And for those of you who missed the other video, this is the previous video from the Irving, Texas stop.
My name is Trooper Farrell with the Hall Hotel. Thanks for the contact, as I watched both of you throw cigarettes out on two separate occasions. I watched the cigarette go off the passenger side, and then a couple miles down the road, you threw a cigarette out. Is there a reason you guys are throwing cigarettes out on the road?
I don't remember doing
that.
To be honest with you, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Are you both smoking in the car? All right.
Are you
smoking? All right. What's going to happen is you're both going to receive a citation for throwing trash out on the highway.
Okay.
People got to pick that trash up, and it's really unsafe to have to do that on the highway.
I understand.
1129 to 1134 on mobile. If you're 10-8, I might use your help to search a couple females.
Hey, Paul, where you at?
All right, Angel, you hop out with me. In my system, where are you going?
We were heading up to Oklahoma, a little road trip.
You're going to Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just left
one hotel. Do you have a family up there, or what's the reason?
No, we're going to the casino.
Oh, going to the casino. Yeah. Okay. How much marijuana is in that car? And don't lie to me.
I don't smoke marijuana.
Okay, how much marijuana is in that car? That's
no,
my
I
question.
Swear to God, I don't smoke marijuana.
I'm not asking if you smoke it.
I don't think there's any marijuana in the car.
Okay, when's the last time somebody smoked marijuana in that car?
Honestly, I don't know. It's my boyfriend's car, so I just borrowed it.
Cool. There's a little marijuana coming from the car, and that's why I got to talk to you further about it.
Okay.
And the more honest and upfront with me you are, the better it's going to go for you. So you're telling me that there's no marijuana in that car?
To the best of my knowledge, no, there's not.
Okay. Is there anything hidden on your person?
On my person?
On your person. In your shoes, in your underwear, anything like that?
No.
All right.
It's like a criminal right now.
Well,
it's so not.
I got a female troop up the road. She's going to come down here. We're just going to check a little bit more.
Okay.
Hey, ma'am.
Hey.
Hey, what's up? Thanks.
Yep.
They're both acting real weird.
Okay, which one do you want me to start with? Do you have a particular one that you just...
The driver is who I'm more skeptical of. This is going to be the one with the white t-shirt right here, and that's the aunt. There may be a bounce back in there or something, but I'm still going to search it.
Okay, I'm going to use your video, okay?
Yeah, feel free.
That way I don't have to walk her all the way over there.
Yeah, no.
The female voice that you're hearing, and that's the female who's doing the search right now with the one pair of gloves, is Trooper Kelly Hellison. Trooper Hellison was fired over this and is now facing two counts of sexual assault. The trooper in the other case has also been fired. But it should never come to this. It should never get to the point where we have to take these troopers to court on this. The idea that we would use body cavity searches to come up with a small user amount of marijuana is ludicrous. It's against everything this country stands for. Gotta take a break. Take care of some of the anxiety. We'll be right back.
If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
NORML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Fun. Big Daddy thinks.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, on today's show, we're going to bring you some music from this album that was given to me. I think Herb Thrasher got a hold of this at one of the gigs. Maybe it was the Northwest String Summit. But it's by Blaine and Sarah, and the album is called Long Time Coming. Blaine and Sarah, it's Blaine Heinonen and Sarah Wolf. They are both acoustic guitarists and singer-songwriters. They've put this little EP together, featuring four tracks, and you can find more about them at Facebook, facebook.com/Blaine and Sarah, B-L-A-I-N-E for Blaine, S-A-R-A-H for Sarah, or just visit them at blaineandsarah.com. From the EP, A Long Time Coming, this is the tune called Scorned on your Daily Toker Tunes.
Standing there with my evil grin,
She get home. Man, I was so high. I didn't. Are we cool? Tim, you know me. That's not me.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pens the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Half past on a Monday, and you know that's time for our cannabis science brought to you by Woodpipes, Smoke Shop, and Speakeasy. And Dr. Mitch is on the line. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Mitch.
Pleasure to be on.
Oh, so glad to have you here today. And I want to remind folks in our chat room, get your live questions ready. And if you put a Q colon at the beginning of your little chat line, that makes a little icon, makes it stand out a little better for us, and we can pick those questions out and ask them live here to Dr. Mitch, or you can call in live at 971-533-7111. And as we usually do on this segment, we give Dr. Mitch the first word to let us know what is the latest in cannabis science.
My student Mallory Laughlin has a new paper out. Some folks met her at the Mid-Atlantic Conference from Normal. It's in Addiction Research and Theory, and the beginning of the title is, Do I Smell Pot? She basically used olfactory cues for cannabis and showed that this really cued not only users, but also non-users for pot, even though they hadn't actually been told what the smell was, and that made them more likely to think about cannabis, and we're actually laying the groundwork to sort of make fun of the idea that craving is a sign of addiction, because a lot of these folks and a lot of folks in a subsequent study report craving simply by smelling the plant.
Oh, that's quite interesting. We're looking forward to the results on that. There's been a couple of other studies going around that I wanted to get your reaction to. We reported on one last week that claimed that Australian marijuana has the highest levels of THC in the world, which I beg to differ. I live in the Pacific Northwest. But when they do these measurements and they say one country or one place has the highest THC, I mean, how accurate is that? Does it really mean anything?
Well, in fact, the THC analyses are getting pretty accurate, so they're usually within 3%. But we're getting to the point now where it's actually beyond the absurd. So there was a strain found in the UK that was 22% cannabis. We're hearing 25% now. I'm sorry, THC, and it's just above and beyond what you really need. How high is high, and how little do you need to smoke? Now that we have dabs and oils and all these other things, too, it really is sort of missing the point that THC is not the lone cannabinoid, and we really, I hope, are going to move towards taking advantage of cannabidiol and some of these other nice terpenoids and cannabinoids that may have other effects. So let's hope that the growers can start paying attention to that.
Yeah, let's hope. All right. Another story, we just brought this in the news today. The latest Gallup poll showing that really since about 1985, there hasn't been much of an uptick in people trying marijuana, despite the fact that we've got medical in 20 states, legalization in two now. And I was just wondering what you think about that result.
Oh, it's intriguing because what we're discovering, in fact, is that folks who don't try cannabis, when you ask them why, it's not because it's illegal, it's because they're really not interested. And we've seen this in really large sample studies year after year, even with adolescents. So clearly prohibition is not the issue, it's general interest more broadly, and kind of, you know, underlies the fact that really prohibition is not having any kind of effect that's positive.
In the crosstabs for this poll, they showed that older folks, people between 30 and 64, have increased their, you know, their, the number of how many of them have tried marijuana has increased over the years, while the people aged 18 to 29, that number has decreased. I'm wondering, with respect to the older folks, how much of that is just they tried it when they were young in the late 70s and 80s, and so that bubble kind of follows through demographically, but how much also is older folks trying it for the first time now as they get more information about how good it is for the, you know, the various conditions of aging?
In fact, we are seeing some age-related increases, and particularly in that older cohort. The fact that it only goes up to 64 may actually underestimate the number of medical users in the older folks right now. And we are getting interesting data on folks who are 60-plus who have really never even used cannabis back in the 70s or maybe only a handful of times. Suddenly, they're coming up with symptoms that they realize might be treatable, including some that were obvious to them even back then, like too much drooling or not enough appetite or things like that. And so we are seeing medical use in that older cohort account for some of that variance in that increase.
Well, you know, it's something Ethan Nadelman brings up in his talks that the, you know, once marijuana becomes legalized, you won't see a huge increase among young people because most of the young people that want to smoke pot already are and can get it. But among older people who discover it's so good for the diseases of aging, and once they have legal access to it, would want to try that out. Have we seen that in medical marijuana states? Has the age of a average medical marijuana user in, say, California or Montana, is it greater than the age of an average recreational smoker?
As it turns out, it is, but only slightly. So, and I think that's partly the problem is that they're reporting not the median, but actually the mean. Mm-hmm. So we may have some folks who are way out there in their 60s and 70s who are pulling the mean up into its 40s, when in fact not a lot of folks in their 40s are actually the ones who are doing it. It's that there's a cohort of younger, a cohort of older, and it ends up averaging out.
Mm. All right, let's look at the other end of the demographics. One of Kevin Sabet and Project Sam's favorite lines out there is that 1 out of 6 teenagers that tries marijuana will become addicted to it. I did some number crunching. I found there's something around the order of 4 million teenagers in America, and I figured year after year after year, if 1 out of 6 of them were becoming addicted, wouldn't we have a whole lot more adult addicts by now? How can you help me debunk this? I hope I'm on the right track with that.
Well, the oddball thing is, I think there was a grain of truth in a single study that suggested that the general base rate of problems in regular cannabis users is about 1 in 10, but for adolescents, it's a little bit higher, like 1 in 8. The point of that study was that our diagnosis of dependence was biased against younger people, that in fact we were designing the question so that they were more likely to say yes because they didn't understand what the questions meant. The fact that Kevin kind of took this and turned it on its ear and said, okay, rates are higher in teens is a little suspicious in the first place, but I honestly don't know where he got that 1 in 6 number. And of course, 10 years after that, they're no longer teenagers. Why don't we see a whole bunch of 20-somethings with cannabis dependence? Well, what a surprise, we don't.
Yeah, and in fact, when we look decade by decade, the use of marijuana seems to just about halve every decade. You know, you get from the 18 to 29, and then you take that rate from the 30 to 49 is about half as many people, and then 40 to 49 is about half as many people. So much for the super potent addictive skunk weed, huh?
In fact, the standard for things like the opiates and stuff like this, we don't see this kind of rate change at all. Folks who are really enmeshed with it really have a hard time shaking it. And here we're seeing basically half the people leave it behind. Yeah, it's really not the addictive thing they're saying.
All right. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, taking your live questions in our cannabis Q&A. You can get them into our chat room. Just type Q:, and then your question. We'll ask it live here on the air. Or if you're shy and you want to ask your question privately, go to our 420radio.org contact page, and you'll find a drop-down box for Ask Dr. Mitch. Or you can just send the email directly to 420research@gmail.com. There was another story that I came to on today's news, which was a study of Swiss men. And this is interesting because in Switzerland, they have universal conscription. There's like a draft for everybody. Every able-bodied man has to serve. And this gives you kind of a nice cross sample of the population. And they found that the frequent users of marijuana, people who smoked cannabis at least once a week, were 4 times more likely to search for health risk information as people who didn't smoke marijuana. What does this mean as far as anti-drug efforts and propaganda goes?
I don't want to make too much of these data because these poor Swedish conscripts, they fill out every single questionnaire and every single demographic measure in the universe. So some of these may literally just be type 1 errors, things that we're getting by chance. And I feel like until this replicates, we don't want to go too crazy on it. Nevertheless, what it says is we really need to focus on problems and not use. And we should focus on substances that are really troublesome, not cannabis, and that would be a much better use of our efforts rather than trying to drive folks crazy with cannabis and then sending these oddball messages where they say things like, oh, I went ahead and sniffed glue because I heard that marijuana led to heroin.
Okay. We have a question from our chat room from Dreamweaver, who'd like to know, what is your estimate of the number of patients, or I'm sorry, the number of patents on cannabis?
And in fact, I think Dreamweaver may know this answer better than I do, but the bottom line here is that the United States government has been holding patents related to the cannabinoids, and they're so numerous I would be reluctant to guess for fear of underestimating in a comical way. But the point is that there's this surreptitious move to slowly but surely get possession of all the cannabinoids in some kind of oddball pharmaceutical proxy, if you will, and that's not as well known as it ought to be. So we need to spread the word on that, and I appreciate Dreamweaver's efforts along those lines.
We've been reporting a lot on the international scene, and the big news last week was the country of Uruguay moving forward with passing marijuana legalization in their lower house. And I'm just wondering if you've heard much from the international, you work with a lot of researchers from all over the country and all over the world, and I'm just wondering how this is reverberating amongst the scientific community.
I have to confess that the big thing was that my book, Understanding Marijuana, got translated into Spanish. So I was pretty delighted about that part. And in fact, a couple of researchers in Sao Paulo have mentioned that they're really eager, and that's in Portugal, not in Uruguay, but that they're really eager to get some relaxation of their laws and chance, essentially to give them a chance to do more laboratory work. I'm certainly envying my colleagues in Colorado and Washington for some of that very same reason.
Mm. We had a story that we covered last week on our news. It's a topic we've brought up before, but I'm starting to see it in the mainstream press. This was from the Detroit Free Press, and it was a story on cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, and talking to some doctors at Henry Ford Health Center in Brownstown near Detroit. And they go on to talk about, what we've said before, that this is a syndrome where too much marijuana causes people to vomit, gets cramps, and have an urge for a hot shower. I'm wondering if there's been any new study on this and what you think about it now kind of breaking the consciousness here in the mainstream.
There was a review of all the individual case studies. So there were a number of papers where there'd be one person who had it or even three people who had it, and they put them all together, and they got about a dozen people who've had this. What a surprise. I mean, we all have idiographic reactions to different substances. What I want to bring up is the limitless number of folks who use cannabis to treat nausea. So clearly, I mean, the idea that all cannabis causes this in all people is absolutely absurd. The shower thing is for relief of the nausea, not that there's some oddball psychotic delusion about how cannabis suddenly makes you want to take a shower.
I'm so filthy!
Yes, and so I want to emphasize that that's been kind of misrepresented in the media. And then, by all means, hey, alcohol makes people throw up, too. There are lots and lots of drugs that make some people nauseated and others not. This is really no reason to throw anyone in jail.
Agreed. All right, we have time for one more here, and this goes back to last week as well. I had reported on a story that was covered in Science Daily. Headline of it was, "Marijuana use in adolescents may cause permanent brain abnormalities, mouse study suggests." And apparently they were studying mice, and it appears they were having problems with the cortical oscillations in the mice. Can you shed any light on this whatsoever?
I mean, the bottom line on this was, in fact, when you completely heavily dose a rodent at a certain developmental stage with a ton of THC and THC alone, you do get some brainwave abnormalities down the line that, in the lifetime of a mouse looks pretty serious, like going from adolescence to adulthood. What do we have in humans that's even comparable? I have to confess, we wouldn't often generalize from mice to humans on anything along these lines. And I also want to point out that there were no structural changes. We're not seeing the kinds of brain changes we even see with heavy-dose binge-drinking studies with mice that are comparable. But we've said time and again, hey, cannabis is not for kids. And by all means, I certainly stand by that. We don't need to beat this to death.
All right. Well, that's an interesting study, and I always wonder how much they can learn about a person from a mouse's brain, but apparently something. Dr. Mitch joins us every Monday here for Cannabis Q&A. We hope you'll join us next week as well. And Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, thank you.
When we come back, we have time for a radical rant. We're taking a look at the Special Operations Division of the Drug Enforcement Administration, how they're using terrorism spying to go after you. Be right back.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Cause the day was hard and your work was long and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, 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 today we've got quite the story for you here, and it came up so quick, I didn't even have time to finish the graphics here, but we'll get this up and running as fast as we can. Let me just finish that word, and then we'll talk the rest of it. Anyway, today's big story has to do with revelations that were reported by Reuters, the news agency. And basically, the story is classified DEA division supplies secret tips to the police. Remember that traffic stop you got busted for weed? The one where the cops said you made an improper lane change? Remember how you were driving so carefully that night, knowing that you had marijuana in your trunk? Out of all the cars on the freeway, some that were weaving and speeding and driving far worse than you were, how in the world did you manage to arouse the suspicion of Officer Observant and his trusty dope dog Bustum? Because unbeknownst to you, and most importantly, your defense attorney, a classified division of the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, secretly tipped off the cops about you. The program is called the DEA's Special Operations Division, or SOD, and a new report from Reuters blows the lid off the use of, quote, intelligence intercepts, wiretaps, informants, and a massive database of telephone records, end quote, from federal investigations in domestic policing. SOD comprises units from many agencies, including FBI, CIA, IRS, Homeland Security, and the National Security Agency, or NSA, which was revealed by whistleblower Edward Snowden to be engaged in data mining and spying on U.S. citizens. Few organisms thrive in darkness and bullshit. Among them are magic mushrooms and bureaucracies. SOD is no different. SOD was originally formed in 1994 with a few dozen employees and a mandate to pursue Latin American drug cartels. Since then, it has grown to several hundred employees and a secret budget estimated at $125 million a year. And like magic mushrooms, SOD takes us through the looking glass to a land where nothing is as it seems, specifically, your right to a fair trial. Now, that federal cops might help state and local cops catch drug criminals isn't the shocking part. There's nothing illegal or untoward about that. The shocking part of SOD's operations is something known as parallel construction. This is a technique SOD instructs the local cops to use once SOD has given them a tip, so all evidence of SOD's involvement is erased from the forthcoming trial. It's a little like those little blinking lights in Men in Black that wipe your memory clean. This is from the Reuters report. Quote, remember that the utilization of SOD cannot be revealed or discussed in any investigative function, end quote, a document presented to agents reads. The document specifically directs agents to omit SOD's involvement from investigative reports, affidavits, discussions with prosecutors, and courtroom testimony. Agents are instructed to then use, quote, normal investigative techniques to recreate the information provided by SOD, end quote. A former federal agent in the northeastern United States who received such tips from SOD described the process, quote, you'd be told only be at a certain truck stop at a certain time and look for a certain vehicle. And so we'd alert the state police to find an excuse to stop that vehicle and then have a drug dog search it, end quote, the agent said. After an arrest was made, agents then pretended that their investigation began with the traffic stop, not with the SOD tip, the former agent said. The training document reviewed by Reuters refers to this process as parallel construction. In a sense, parallel construction is like money laundering. You know, in money laundering, you make money from drugs, and then you put it into some business or some activity that's legit to make it look like the money was generated from legitimate business, like dry cleaning in the case of Breaking Bad, right? Well, this is money laundering. This is investigation laundering. This is tip laundering. This is the idea of taking the facts as they were, the case as it began, as it was investigated, and then making a whole new trail of investigation to cover that up as if it never existed. Now, the problem with this technique is this little thing called the Sixth Amendment, which recognizes a defendant's right to, quote, compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, end quote. So, when you get stopped by officer observant, your defense attorney can issue subpoenas to the officer, to the trainer of the drug dog, even other witnesses to your driving that night. But with parallel construction, your defense attorney has no idea that the original tip to bust you came from some wiretap in some unrelated investigation, or even an NSA data mine of your private Facebook messages or emails. Your attorney is effectively shut out from an entire line of investigation that may lead to evidence that exonerates you, or at least reveals enough wrongdoing by law enforcement to suppress the evidence obtained in your case. Now, SOD claims that such techniques must be kept confidential in order to protect classified information, despite the long-standing courtroom practice of having the judge examine such evidence in private chambers to determine what can and cannot be exposed at trial. Prosecutors are also kept in the dark about tips from SOD being the justification of their prosecutions. One federal prosecutor in Florida dropped his case when he learned DEA had lied to him about SOD's involvement, telling Reuters that he lost confidence in the investigation. However, most cops don't worry about tips from SOD being exposed in court. Thanks in part to draconian mandatory minimum sentencing laws for drug crimes, most cases in which SOD brought down a drug suspect end in a plea bargain. So the original source of the evidence against a defendant is never explored in open court. Now, another part of this that is so frustrating and offensive is that a lot of the money, the budget, and the training and the authorization for the use of this data mining powers come from a post 9/11 mindset where we got to go after the terrorists. The Daily Mail in the UK, in their story, "A Secretive DEA Program is Using Terrorism Task Forces to Help Local Police Make Small-Time Drug Busts," they note that joint terrorism task forces have been involved in helping out with these sort of activities. From their report, quote, "A secret U.S. DEA unit that parcels out sophisticated intelligence to other law enforcement agency is also using task forces set up to prevent terrorism in order to help police departments build minor local drug cases. The joint terrorism task forces are law enforcement coalitions administered by the FBI that generally include representatives from up to 40 different federal agencies, plus state and local police departments based near each task force's centers of operation. One of the sources say JTTFs are used all the time to help arrest minor drug offenders at the local level. Local law enforcement quietly passes that information on. And Finn Seelander, who's been a guest on our show, a 17-year veteran of the DEA, says there are tons of these task forces, but the joint terrorism task forces are used for this. Absolutely. Russ Jones, also working with LEAP, he was a California narcotics officer. He told the Mail Online, quote, "It was always an unwritten practice to hide sources, and that was called creative report writing. It was done all the time in law enforcement, and still is apparently, now with official sanction," end quote. There are 103 such joint terrorism task forces nationwide. 71 of them were instituted after the 9/11 attacks. At least one joint terrorism task force is based in each of the 56 cities where the FBI has a field office. Each unit typically includes reps from the NSA, FBI, DEA, Federal Air Marshals, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, Secret Service, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And part of what they're data mining here had to do with, in one of these reports talking about a database, this Reuters database that has this Reuters report talks about the database that has over a billion records in it that are being sifted and, you know, looked at for coordination and cooperation to try to find terrorists, presumably. This information is now being given routinely to our local and state police for small-time drug cases. The email I got from the Drug Policy Alliance says last week, oh, it mentions all the other scandals that are going on in the DEA and calls for a congressional investigation, a top-to-bottom review of the DEA for not just this scandal, not just this scandal where they're using spying on American citizens and trying to hide from defense attorneys and prosecutors the source of the tips in these investigations. But we also had the lawsuit that was just settled for Daniel Chong, the UC San Diego student who was left alone for 5 days to die by the DEA. They had to pay $4.1 million for him. Members of Congress still want to know about the drug war operation in Honduras last year that led to the massacre of four indigenous civilians, four native citizens of Honduras. In 2011, the Fast and Furious scandal was shown that DEA agents smuggled or laundered millions of dollars in drug profits for Mexican drug cartels and let guns walk across the border that ended up killing a Border Patrol agent. Defense attorneys in Arizona are claiming misconduct because the DEA has rehired Andrew Chambers, an informant who was terminated by the Department of Justice years ago for serial perjury. DEA's rehired that guy. DEA continues to raid and arrest patients and providers in the medical marijuana states. And DEA Administrator Michelle Lenhart, who has direct ties to the Andrew Chambers scandal, by the way, and most of the other scandals, can't even tell you whether or not marijuana is more harmful than heroin. She was also involved in a scandal called House of Death when a DEA informant helped murder at least a dozen people in Juarez. And she has overruled the administrative law judges of the DEA when they have come forth saying that Professor Craker should be allowed to grow medical marijuana and test it, that marijuana ought to be rescheduled. These continuing scandals of the DEA, now capped off with this Special Operations Division scandal, calls for not just a review in Congress of the Drug Enforcement Administration, but the abolishment of the Drug Enforcement Administration. It is time for us to fold DEA and put the coverage of drugs and the use of drugs back into the Food and Drug Administration. They keep saying they want FDA control, FDA approval. Let's let the FDA, let's let scientists, let's let doctors, let's let researchers decide what our policies on marijuana should be. That's all for the Radical Rant today. Thanks for joining us, and stay tuned for our new summer schedule. Now that we're in the summer festival season, Toker Talk Radio is on hiatus, and we've moved some of our most popular shows to the 4 o'clock hour. Coming up next, Stony Sundays with Coral Reefer, the show from just yesterday. Check out Coral Reefer on Stony Sundays and more of our favorite shows, including Danny Danko, Sub Cool, Jorge Cervantes, and Jody Emery, all at the 4 o'clock hour. And at 7 o'clock hour, more of our most popular shows tonight, including Drug Truth Network, followed by a replay of the new Viper Hour. Also at 5 o'clock, stay tuned for Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. For 420 Radio, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.